It's Thursday, and guess what? The sun is back in London. I'm Gab. He's Jules. We have a ton of midweek football to talk about. Yep. So, and then we'll also be getting into, of course, Barcelona and Inter Milan and all that good stuff. But let's start with the top of the table clash in the Premier League, Liverpool and Spurs. And let's start with, shall we, Mark Ogden.
Of course.
Augie, I thought this was a really, really good game. We've seen supposed big clashes where there was fear of losing, fatigue, blah, blah, blah. Both these teams, of course, drew over the weekend. I don't know if they were holding something back, but I thought we had a really entertaining game, and I thought Liverpool played really, really well.
Yeah, it was a great game, and I agree that Liverpool played well, but I thought Tottenham played well as well in a different kind of way. You're really lucky at Liverpool to be sat really high up in the main stand, so you can see how the teams line up. And Tottenham, you know, by and large, were a 4-4-2, but the organisation, the banks of four, it was so rigid, and you could tell that Mourinho has drilled his players for days and days now to get this formation right. In the second half, sometimes it was the back six, they had the wing backs dropping in. It was really interesting to see from a tactical point of view how they lined up. But I thought that, you know, Jose's got his team working really well now. I think Højbjerg's made a massive difference. And when they've got an outlet like Son and Kane up front, they've got a real chance. But Spurs look like they've matured a lot under Mourinho. And I think, although they lost last night, they definitely have what it takes to last the pace this season. I think that, you know, Jose will always be criticised for the way he sets his team up, parking the bus. But he wasn't parking the bus last night. You know, they hit the post with Bergwijn. Kane had two good chances. Son scored his goal.
All those chances you described, though, right, and I'll play devil's advocate, weren't they all, except for one of them, chances in transition or set pieces?
Yeah.
Let me help you. Yes.
That. Yes, the answer is yes.
Do you think so? I mean, listen, the transition, whatever, they were good chances. I mean, Alisson's mistake for Kane's lob was a decent effort. Bergwijn hit the post. What I'm saying is, it's fine margins, isn't it? It's fine margins between a big win at the top of the table and a defeat. Liverpool created more chances than Tottenham, but it's not all about how you cut teams apart, the flair you play with. If you want to play counter-attacking, that's fine. If you do it well, like Tottenham did, no problem with that.
No, I completely agree that it's fine. Mourinho wanted trouble, but I think the test, we've said this before, the test is always going to be not so much in these games against a team like Liverpool who are going to demand the ball, they're going to play that way. It's the right way to play against them, given the players Mourinho has. The concern is always, you know, what happens when you go and you play against teams that park the bus. And sometimes they've done that and they scored first and then they absolutely destroyed them. Other times they've been able to pass around them. Other times down the road, I think it's legitimate to wonder whether they can continue doing that. Jules, yeah. Klopp and Mourinho felt slightly differently about this game afterwards.
Yeah, certainly at the end, Augie, when Mourinho said to Klopp when they shook hands, the better team lost tonight, and Klopp clearly was very surprised and like, really? And you could see on his face. And then what I loved is that after that little altercation, and then Mourinho goes back and says something, then Klopp starts celebrating really loud in Mourinho's ears with his own players on the pitch when the two managers were on the pitch. I mean, I get, yeah, Mourinho's got a point.
That wasn't all just fun, was it?
It was not just fun. You could see the aggro between the two, and I guess the competitiveness, I guess. But did you think the best team lost? But certainly, Mourinho has a point, and he was clearly frustrated at the end because of the chances that they created. And Klopp was like, well, we were the better team. We won. We deserve to win.
Yeah, it's playground stuff, isn't it? And listen, the best team didn't lose. I think Liverpool shaded it, but it was very close. And I think that both teams would have deserved to come out with a point or even a win. I don't think Spurs would have been harsh bitches if they'd won. Look, Mourinho and Klopp are both as bad as each other, but with Jose, you know what you get.
Can we just say they're as good as each other rather than as bad as each other? Because I have no problem with this. Like, why is it bad?
Yeah, like, why is Mourinho saying to Klopp, the better side lost? Managers don't say that to each other.
They're as bad as each other. Jose will always be painted as the villain this episode because of his track record. And he started it on Tuesday before the game, stirring it up a little bit, talking about Liverpool's injuries, which is fine. But, you know, Klopp gets away with it a little bit because he'll say something and he'll have his laugh and his giggle. And, people love Klopp because he's Klopp. But, you know, Klopp reacts pretty sourly at times to any kind of result that goes against him. You know, Pep Guardiola's the same. It's almost like, oh, well, if you don't play the way we want you to play and we struggle to beat you, it's not fair. So Klopp can be as hard to like.
That's what Mourinho was saying when he said, "Oh, if I behave like Klopp did on the touchline," and we saw Klopp really angry in the first half. He said, "I'd be off and I wouldn't be here, and it would be different because Jose feels that he's treated differently to Klopp," which was a bit what Mark is saying.
Yeah, he got angry over the disallowed goal, and he kept going back. It was really close offside. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's offsides.
But when you're in the stadium, I mean, there were fans yesterday, Mark, so you maybe didn't hear as much as we used to before when it was all behind closed door, but Klopp shouts so loud. I mean, he's so loud all the time, and he's so like so on it, isn't he?
I think that the crowd are making a difference, because until the crowd's been back in, we've hardly seen any touchline rows or bust ups, as they call it, you know, between the coaches and manager, because there's no audience to play in front of. But I think Jose, with the crowd there last night, obviously it was all the Liverpool crowd, and they were very noisy for 2,000 people. I think Jose uses that as the pantomime villain. It gives him energy, and he likes to play up to a little bit. Right. And I think we'll see more of it now that the fans are back in. Well, until we change tiers again, obviously.
Yeah. Reece Williams, who I think would have been like fifth or sixth, or I think a year ago, he was playing for Kidderminster. Yeah. He had to start because of the injury crisis. I think we need to also underscore the number of players who are missing for Liverpool, because I think that is...
Jose said it's only Van Dijk.
Yeah, okay. It's only Van Dijk because he has trouble counting. You know, he runs out of fingers, right? But they got a performance out of him. But more importantly, Curtis Jones, I mean... Thiago Alcantara can take his time coming back. Gini Wijnaldum, they can rethink the contract, because Curtis Jones looks legit, doesn't he?
Curtis Jones looks a really good player, a really silky player. He can move between the lines. He's just got everything. He looks very confident. He's got plenty of time. He creates his own time. Always looks like he's going to create a chance as well. You know, it was about a year ago that he scored that goal against Everton in that derby game, and it was a great goal. And at the time, he thought, this kid's got something. He's proved it, but he's done it very quietly. I think he's not got the attention he deserves, actually, for his performances.
He's only 19 and he's very young, but he started in the game against Ajax, which was the first game in the Champions League group stage, back at the start of the season. And Klopp took him off at half-time. It was just not working. And I think the progress that he's made from that game to a game of this calibre last night, on Wednesday night, just I think is incredible. And I think Klopp and his staff deserve a lot of credit, but also he deserves a lot of credit because he was a bit impatient last season. He wanted to play more, was not playing much. Obviously, in the summer, he sees Thiago Alcantara coming. There's Naby Keita also, who started the season, was fit and started the season, plus Henderson, plus Wijnaldum and all of that.
Plus Oxlade-Chamberlain, who knew at some point was going to come back.
But now, clearly, it looks like, I don't know how you take him off the team after a performance like last night, and all that progress that he's made in the last 4 months is remarkable.
Yeah, just following on from this, because, I mean, the reality is, without those injuries, we would have seen a lot less of Curtis Jones. Yeah. And, of course, the injuries at the back as well, because obviously when Fabinho plays at the back, you know, he's really good. He can't play in midfield at the same time. Is he an example of somebody at a big club where Liverpool, you know, once he signed Thiago Alcantara, I thought, like, oh, maybe should they send him on loan, get him playing time, whatever. This is one of those decisions that worked out. Maybe if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain hadn't been injured, just in terms of depth.
Yeah.
You know, because on paper, if everybody's fit, he would have been, you know, number six or seven, if not eight, in that midfield, right, Mark?
Yeah, and at the start of the season, we'd have looked at that, and he would have thought, well, am I going to get a game? Do I have to go on loan somewhere? And it would have been quite disheartening, I think. But, you know, I think we've discussed this before, Gav, about Liverpool's midfield. It's quite an old unit. You know, there's a lot of players, either very late 20s or early 30s. And, you know, if Curtis Jones has a bit of patience, like you say, he's only 19, then the future's his. But players these days, they're very impatient. They don't want to wait until they're 21, 22 to play. Look at Phil Foden at Man City. He's still, you know, he's almost 21. He's not playing often enough. So Curtis Jones has taken advantage of the fact that Liverpool have had injuries. And I agree. I think that, you know, he won't play every game. Coaches will rotate players a lot more this season at this age. But, you know, he's showing that he can be a Liverpool player for 10 years. He's young enough. And I think he'll see off all the older players. And they need some youth in there. They need to start planning for the future, because, you know, age is catching up with all of them, and we've seen injuries catching up as well. You know, Thiago's barely kicked a ball for Liverpool this season.
Yeah, there's clearly a parallel universe when they said where they send him out on loan, and maybe, you know, he's excelling for Aston Villa or somebody at this stage. But, you know, and then there's a question mark, well, can he do it when he comes back? You know, he's there, he's integrated into the movements of the midfield, even if he doesn't play, and so he's more ready to step in. I don't know. I guess you have to take every case on an individual basis. Yeah. But that brings me to my other point. Gini Wijnaldum, I don't know what kind of breakfast cereal he eats, but he's played, I think he has rested a couple times. We've said this before, but he's played every minute of every game this season. his contract is expiring. Mike, when you and I did the sort of the keeper dump in the past, I made the point, you know, you have to decide. You have to give him a new contract or you risk losing him for nothing. But do you give him a new contract when, you know, you look at his age, he's in his late 20s, you've got other people you want to renew. You've got a lot of players. You said before the midfield was old. I think at the time, I'm just going to rehash this, you suggested that they sell Henderson. Let's not revisit that because we don't want to feed the trolls.
Yep.
But having made that decision, where are we with the con? I mean, do you think that they should extend his deal? Can you extend a short-term deal? Should he take it? Because if I'm Ben Aldam, I spent most of my career at PSV Eindhoven, right? And then a bit at Newcastle, and I made some money, but... You know,
this is his last big contract.
This is his last big contract. He's not somebody who's had huge contracts his entire career. I think he knows that Liverpool's financial situation is what it is because of the pandemic. But he also knows that he could walk into most clubs on a free transfer and get himself a huge deal and get set up for life. I mean, how would you play it if you're Liverpool?
Well, Liverpool's position is as it was, that, you know, they're open to talks with Wijnaldum and they'll happily keep him on. But I do think that privately that position might have shifted a bit, you know, because of the emergence of Curtis Jones, and the sense that, you know, if you're Wijnaldum as well, what does he have to do at Liverpool? What else does he have to achieve? And like Jules said, it's his last contract. If I was Wijnaldum, I'd run the contract down and take my pick of a load of great offers next summer, because there's nothing else to do then. And I think as time goes on at Liverpool, he'll play fewer and fewer games because of his age. Just take the chance and move on. I think, well, you know...
Not to mention that if the season ended today, I'm not saying Wijnaldum probably wouldn't be Liverpool's player of the year because people in his position don't win it.
He was yours last year.
The contribution he's made,
he's
in terms of minutes,
to
he's got
to
be a candidate for it.
He's incredible.
And so even if you wait till the end, you know, you can extend your deal with Liverpool, you know, if you wait till June 30th, yeah, you know, test free agency and say, you know what, I'll come back.
And he can sign a new deal and get a big... A big signing on fee from Liverpool themselves, yeah, and maybe a little pay rise, I don't know, something, and sign a 3-year plus another one in option or something like that. That makes everybody happy. I just think he's a different profile to Curtis Jones. It's not Curtis Jones would replace Wijnaldum if Wijnaldum goes. You will have to get someone else who's a bit more in his profile. I think it would be a huge loss. And the other day, Paul Scholes was saying, why would he want to leave Liverpool? Well, there's many reasons why he would want to leave Liverpool. But if you put it the other way around, why would Liverpool not do everything to keep him, and not, you know, don't do anything crazy and give him like 50 million a year or something. But I think he would really be a huge loss for them.
I am not really surprised. Paul Scholes, who spent his entire career at the one club, would ever conceive of, why would you ever want to leave a club?
No, but you get his point too.
Augie?
From the perspective of, you know, letting him go for nothing, it Liverpool lose out on the asset. Let's remember, during the summer, the talk was that to get Thiago in, they had to get a player out. And it was always going to be Wijnaldum. That was the player that we were talking about because of the situation, his contract. If Wijnaldum had gone, he'd have left a massive hole. And I think the fact that even if he plays this season and has a great season and he goes for nothing at the end of the season, the financial risk is being rewarded by his performances this season. So I think everyone wins, really. And I take your point, Jules, about he's a very good player. I think he had been quite underrated until the last maybe year or so. But I do think that at some point you have to make that decision as a club. And I think if Liverpool keep adding years to their 30-year-old midfielders, they're going to have a lot of old midfielders in 2 or 3 years' time. So I think they have to look for a younger replacement now.
Don't give Gav ammunitions, because he was ready to then go like, yeah, that's why. He's been saying that for years and years.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm going to say it again about Thiago. I think he was the right signing situation you're in, because I think you need Thiago to go and break down teams who go and park the bus, if whatever. I don't have a problem with the signing, but when people said, oh, look, it's only 20 million, and he's one of the best. No, it's 20 million. You've added another guy who's in his late 20s. He's an enormous salary.
Yeah.
These things matter. These things matter in squad building. And the way I'm so tired of whether it's fans or usually it's ex-pros saying, oh, it cost you nothing. Oh, 20 million. What's that? The current market. No, you're all talking nonsense. You're all being stupid and you're all talking nonsense. And fortunately, Liverpool realized that. Because I said, I'm on board with the Thiago signing. I think it was the right signing in terms of giving them something different. But you're seeing with his injury record this year, which, by the way, is no different than his injury record in the previous six seasons, that, you know, there's a reason why his contract ran down at Bayern. And there's a reason why they felt that they couldn't keep putting money in there. So, you know, let's try to take a more holistic approach, to quote Man City.
You know, just one thing on Spurs.
More than one thing on Spurs. Why don't we give Spurs some credit?
Yeah,
they were top of the league until
recently. I'm watching that game, and I've seen them so many times. I was at the City game, and it's the debate that will never end, because there's just not an answer to it. But I'm like, okay, I love what they do in the counter-attack. I love counter-attacking football. I've got no problem with it. That's what Jose does great. No problem. But then I see the players and I think, oh, I would love to see them play better football. I really would. I would love them to go to Liverpool.
When you say better football, define better football.
Having more than 25% of the ball to start with.
You mean...
No, they did that in the Pochettino and won nothing. I mean, that's the thing.
They didn't have 25% of the ball with Pochettino. I'm sorry.
He means they played attacking football.
Yeah, no. But they might not win anything this season either. So, what? And at the end, we said, well, you know, well, regardless of how they play, they still win nothing.
But I think,
do you see my point of view?
I see your point of view, Jules.
If I'm Heung-Min Son, okay, I scored last night. But if I'm Heung-Min Son, I'm thinking like, I wish I could have more of the ball. I wish I could have more chances. I wish I didn't just run to defend.
But I think, isn't it a case of you have to play to the strength of your players? So,
don't tell me they can't play football, Gab.
No, I'm not saying they can't play football. But what I'm saying is, if you are going to go and play more, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Mark, if you are going to play more of a possession-based type football and the tricky passing and the movement, can you do it with this group of players? And obviously Mourinho...
Of course you can.
Why? But who in that midfield can pass apart from Lo Celso?
But, I mean, what kind of passes do you want? Of course, Højbjerg and Sissoko can pass the ball, and Dombele can pass the ball. Kane can pass the ball.
You have to put into context a bit. I mean, Pochettino's teams would have had more possession, obviously, but they were too loose at the back. And you can't say that this team doesn't score goals. I saw them score 6 at Old Trafford. They scored 5 at Southampton. Tottenham can score goals and beat teams. It was Liverpool away. It was Anfield. You can't go to Liverpool and play wide open and play a possession game. I just think that
I'm not just talking about that game last night. I'm just talking in general this season. You know, I think this is a team. And again, I've got no problem with the counter-attacking football. I love it. I love what Jose does, and he does it great. But I'm sat there sometimes thinking like, oh, I would just love to see, because I know they can, and I would just love to see them with more attractive football. Not just at Liverpool, but in general.
The performance at Chelsea was bad.
That one was bad. Against City, okay, they won. That was bad. Against Arsenal, that was bad. They won. Of course they won.
This is the danger of Mourinho sometimes, isn't it? That he thinks he's got a chance of a title and he will play just a negative game to get a 1-0 and just get out of there. It will sort of like go back into himself. So even at Chelsea, that great team at Chelsea would do that. I mean, he had some great attacking flair at Chelsea. But that is the danger of Mourinho at times, that he will just happily settle the old George Graham.
And if you win, no problem. If you win the league, no problem. But if you don't win the league and come close...
I'm sorry. If you're Mourinho and you finish second this season, hypothetically, to a Liverpool side that are the reigning Premier League champions, that have won the Champions League 2 years ago, that have a wage bill that's multiples more than Spurs, and you finish ahead of City and United and Chelsea and all these teams, you've won your own personal league. I mean, I'm sorry. It is a successful season. You can't just say, oh, you win the league. Otherwise, you failed if you don't play attacking football.
Did you say that for Pochettino when he finished second?
Absolutely.
So...
Absolutely. I had high praise for Pochettino. I tried to look at it in terms of the resources people have. Mourinho has perhaps in some ways more resources than Pochettino, but he's still far behind the competition.
Had Poch in certain games play like Mourinho this season, they might have won the league. And if Mourinho finishes second with this team at the end of this season, and you say if you play a bit more attractive at times and a bit more offensive football, you might have won the league as well.
The one thing I will say about Pochettino, about Mourinho, and I think you will see this as the season progresses, about playing slightly more possession football, is especially when you, not so much against Liverpool, but when you play against teams that try to press you high, playing more of a possession game is a way for you to invite the opposition to press you, and then you can play in transition, which they do exceptionally well, right? So if they just sit and purely play on the counter, then that becomes less effective because you can have less opportunities to do that. If you keep the ball, if you build it up more slowly, you invite the press from the opposition. And when a team presses, I'm sorry, no, pressing football's very.
I'm not saying that you have to build from the back every single time, but I'm saying that variance higher up on the pitch.
I think that is something that Mourinho wants to introduce. And I think it's something we will see from Spurs as the season goes on. you know, it's not necessarily going to be eight guys ahead of the ball. It's like we're not going to turn into leads and be running back and forth. But those pauses, those controlling of the game with the possession. But I think it's going to be because it makes the transition game better.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I think a question that's probably worth asking, now we're not halfway to the season, but we've had a decent run of it. Would Spurs have been better placed not spending the money on Wade and Gareth Bale and using it to get a more creative player? I mean, they should have gone for Thiago Alcantara rather than Gareth Bale, because Gareth Bale, he had one Premier League start this season and he wasn't even on the bench last night. That's almost like the elephant in the room, that the Bale thing isn't really working, isn't it? He's not really done anything. It's, you know, what's happening with Gareth Bale?
Yeah, we don't know the exact terms. I mean, I think the reported figure is that they're paying half his wages and getting him for free. Half of Gareth Bale's wages is still Harry Kane money, right?
And the rest, it's more than that. I mean, it's probably a lot more than Harry Kane's earning, but yeah.
Well, I think half of Harry Kane. I mean, Bale doesn't make twice Harry Kane, does he? Or maybe he does, but I stand corrected. But it is something that was emotional. I think he hopes that I think the reason Bale is there is because when they go and they play against teams that park the bus or sit, they're chasing, he still can have those moments. And I think that was the thinking behind that. But there's no way, I think, right now you can put Gareth Bale in this team in a way that makes sense, simply because you're not going to get the work off the ball, simply because he's not going to do what Bergwijn does.
No,
you're not going to drop Son, obviously.
No.
So, you know, I think it was a calculated risk. It's not a choice I would have made. I agree with you there, Mark. But it was something I think, you know. Hey, look, maybe deep down, Daniel Levy does have emotions. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Liverpool and Spurs. Let's go to what I learned on La Liga TV is the best league in the world, La Liga. Barcelona and Real Sociedad. Barcelona win 2-1. There's highs and there are lows overall. And you can't just be Griezmann focused in your answer.
No. Well, if not even on his new haircut, like on the braids. Is that how you say in English?
I said a long time ago, we live in England, right? They have this obsession with footballers' haircuts. Like, dodgy bird. Like, I swore a long time ago, I'm not going to make fun. I will remark on it, but I will not make fun of it.
No,
I will not judge. Wear whatever you want. I don't care.
We don't. I don't want to focus on him too much, although he missed.
He had a really bad game.
He should have had a hat trick.
Yes, he had a poor game, which comes after his good game.
Yeah, that, I like the movement. If I can find a positive somewhere, I like the movement and how available he was and that he created those chances. But yeah, he hit the crossbar once, he should have scored. The big one is the one on the line that somehow he gives back to the goalkeeper. Right. But yeah, he could have had a trick. Really good first half, I thought, from Barcelona in a lot of respect. I like Pedri, I like Jordi Alba, of course, who scored and assisted.
With his wrong foot.
With his wrong foot as well, great goal. Second half, I thought it was more difficult. And again, it's not, I don't want to be always all negative on Koeman.
What was the formation? Did you not like his 4-1-5 formation?
So,
his 4-1 chaos formation with
so if you look
Frankie de Jong playing center forward?
If you look at the average positions, he almost looked like a 4-4-2 because Pedri and Messi are quite central together. Then you've got Braithwaite on the left.
Yeah.
And Griezmann a bit on the right.
Now Griezmann coming into the middle. And then like Frankie de Jong effectively playing up front. I mean, this is the crazy thing.
It's chaos, but chaos worked in that first half. And then as soon as he makes his silly, stupid substitutions, which he always does, then he goes pear-shaped and they almost like drop 2 points because Real Sociedad could have scored at the end.
Yeah, I almost felt, and then by the way, just for context, this was a Real Sociedad team playing without arguably their best player, Mikel Oyarzabal, and definitely their most experienced, most talented player, at least as a passer, in David Silva. Yeah. And this was Real Sociedad, which, of course, started the season like a house on fire and then started, you know, losing points. You figure, all right, they're losing confidence. But they were in it. They were in it until the very, very end.
Big time. Big time.
And, is that says more about Barca and the fact that there's still a lot of insecurity there. There's tactical imbalance. There's Koeman's stupid substitution.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and there's still a lot of issues. And Messi has to be a worry in a sense, because although Athui was very vocal and he was always encouraging, and you could see he was very committed, very involved, I don't think there's just enough. I don't know if it's because fitness-wise he's not 100% and he's not ready to have the intensity that he usually plays with. I don't know if it's his age. I don't know if he's really unhappy there.
He looked more engaged in this game, but he was not. I mean,
in terms of performances,
he did not produce. No,
this is not good.
No. He appears and then he disappears. Yeah. There's clearly, I think, in parallel to the 4-1 chaos formation, there's clearly another issue there. I want to give a shout out to Pedri, because I don't know if this made the highlight reels, but this game would have ended in a draw if not for the fact that this kid, I don't know where the hell he was coming from, because he was playing at the other end of the pitch, goes and legs at the length of the pitch, and he makes an incredible sort of decisive tackle on Alexander Isak, who's through on goal, and then he goes and he just face plants into the into the post. I mean, that guy's got big stones. Yes. He's 18 years old, and I'll tell you what. I say this in a positive way. He doesn't look like a Barcelona player. Doesn't look like a La Masia product in the
sense.
Which
he isn't. So maybe he's just normal.
But how much time did he spend there? He was there a year, right?
Yeah.
But he doesn't look like the kind of he isn't. But he has that presence, that intensity, which I'm not saying people like Xavi Iniesta didn't have it, but they certainly, at 18, even if they were really, really good, they were a certain kind of player.
Yeah.
This guy plays like a veteran. He plays like he's the boss on the pitch, which is really unusual when you're that young.
It's really impressive. It's really impressive.
All right, Jules, let's stick with Barca here for a minute, and let's try to be constructive. And by the way, in case you haven't figured it, podcast listeners, the TV folk have left us. Window opens in January. We know they don't have any money.
Yeah.
Do we agree that they have to bring in a center back?
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, last time, I mean, Guess Araujo, he's what it is.
It's okay, but
it's not okay. I mean,
well, no, it's okay in certain games. You can't win anything like that.
And also, I mean, even if they don't, you still need four bodies back there, right? It's not just a question of upgrading, but so Umtiti's done, yeah?
Well, he came on. He came on in at the weekend. He came on in midweek. So I don't know fitness-wise if he can just
comes
play
on,
20
he
minutes.
Stands,
yeah, no, I know, but
his knee hurts again.
He's still playing. He's still part of the squad.
No, I know, but he's not somebody you're going to rely on, right? And probably, I mean, I guess it's done okay, but I don't think that this is somebody you necessarily is ready to contribute regularly.
It's not the answer.
And Araujo may never be the answer either, right? Yeah. And you know, so that basically leaves you Longley as the only viable center back. I don't want to see Frankie de Jong playing center back because I need him in midfield or up front.
Yeah, fair enough.
But you agree that they need to sell. Who can they sell? That's realistic. That in this current market, it's Riqui Puig.
It's Alenia, it's Riqui Puig, it's those fringe players that, I mean, Riqui Puig, I have to say I struggle to understand why he's not playing more.
Because he plays the same position, he'd be another guy who would go and fit into the splodgy chaos in front of Busquets.
True, I guess. But Riqui Puig, Alenia, Junior Firpo maybe, and you take a risk in a way at left back to have only Jordi Alba, and then you can play someone else.
Okay.
I don't know.
So back in the day, let me educate some of our younger podcast listeners. Back in the pre-pandemic day, what would happen here is this. They would go to these guys and they would say, they would go to some of their favorite agents and they would say, listen, find me a home for Riqui Puig, right? But we need the cash now. So ring up one of your friendly teams, like maybe Maybe Marseille back in the day, maybe yeah. Monaco, maybe Wolves, maybe Valencia. You know where I'm going with this, right? And have them send us 25 million, right? We'll arrange a recompra, as they call it, a buyback. Can't be a loan, it's going to be a permanent thing, right? For 30 million, yeah. right? So they can make a little bit of money off them should we want to buy them back.
Yeah.
And then just do us this favor, and then this summer when we sell Griezmann or so, when we go buy somebody, we'll cut you into the deal so you can help us out, right? Yeah. This is the ecosystem, right? It does my head in when people talk about agents. They're like, oh, look, he represents this guy. He doesn't. Agents get paid by clubs, right? I don't want to reopen the Mino can of worms. He should never set foot in this club again. Okay, fine. He never sets foot in this club again. Then you cut yourself out at a whole bunch of deals, not just with players he represents, but players. It's the same thing for George Mendes, right?
Of course.
These are people who move.
Everyone.
In the current state of football.
Everyone.
You know, in some future state of football where there's transparency and whatever, maybe it's different. But right now, this is what it is, right?
Yeah.
But the difference is now, I think it's difficult to find a club that will materially give you 20 or 25 million for Alenia, who I think has played a handful of minutes this year. Ricky Puig, I assume he's played a little bit, but
a little bit. Yeah, he came on late in the.
So you don't even know what you're getting, right? No. You don't even know if these people can. And clubs don't have money because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So you can't even do that operation. You have to sell a serious player, right? Not a junior Firpo. And serious players to sell, they don't have very many, do they?
No, they don't have.
They want to sell.
Yeah,
right?
Guys they want to sell, they're ready to cash in on. And that's the problem, because if you want to go and get Eric Garcia, and Man City are not going to do you any favors, even if he only has 6 months left on his contract, they're going to say, okay, but we still want 30 million or whatever. And you just can't afford that. You can't do it. So where do you go from there? Because there's no point either for Barca to go and get an average centre back. They already have plenty of average centre backs.
I mean, Eric Garcia, I kind of feel there could be scope there. If City are serious about Lionel Messi, and I don't necessarily believe that they are.
Yeah.
But look, I'm in the minority, right? Everybody says, oh no, Messi's definitely leaving and City are definitely interested, but whatever. If they were definitely interested, you could go to them and you could say, listen, it's a free transfer in the summer. We'll prepare the situation here to help it happen. If you had the authority to do that. But the problem is they don't even have the authority to do that right now.
No.
Because they don't have a president. I mean, they don't have a real president.
No, they don't have a real president. I mean, they've got one on a big banner by the Bernabeu, though, and one that is hoping to get elected, Joan Laporta, which is pretty incredible if you haven't seen the photo. I think again, it's the mess that we talk about since the beginning of the season, where with your team, with your manager, with the elections, with your recruitment, what do? You don't even have a sporting director in place right now.
Yeah.
So everything is so difficult. Everything has been made so difficult. Where do you go from there? Do you go and get Memphis Depay? Bellona saying he's not going anywhere in January. He would want to go to Barcelona. What about Eric Garcia? Right. He wants to go to Barcelona, and City is like, okay, but give us 30, 35 million, which you can't afford. It's just crazy, but they need.
What if they need a body, right?
They need players.
Okay,
for sure.
Let me give you one. What if you ring up your boy Arteta, or maybe his boss, and you say, "Look, give us Socrates or Mustafi, give us a live body." Because this is the other phenomenon that's going on, right? Manchester United, you know, Araujo, Abai, all these dudes who aren't playing, who are on big wages, but you know, not enormous wages. Could you envision a swap deal where we say, right, we'll put a 20 million tag on Socrates, for example, who at least has legs, and we swap him for Ricky Puig, right?
Yeah.
So Arsenal get a midfielder who can pass the ball, not named Danny, which is already a star, right?
Yeah.
And
I think a swap is the only option for them.
And if you're Socrates, you're saying, yeah, okay, I'm out of contract in the summer, but hey, this is Barcelona. I signed an 18-month deal. I'll be a sub at Barcelona. I'm 31, 32.
Yeah.
Right? What do I care, right?
I agree with you. I think a swap is the only option.
Something like that. Or they could do the deal. Well, Inter have millions of players. They could send them.
But even Lyon and Memphis, maybe there's a way of finding something there to get Memphis to Barcelona and Lyon get a player that they're happy with.
Question is, who does these deals? Because as you said, there's a serious void at the top of the club.
Yeah, definitely.
Enough cumin. Let's lighten the mood with some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Chelsea give up an injury time winner to Pedro Neto on the counter as they lose to Wolves 2-1. Jules, it's the first time in 12 months that they lose back-to-back games in the Premier League. And Kai Havertz has another rough game.
How many times do we have to say, if it's to play him in, not in his position, just don't play him at all? Either play him in his position or don't play him at all. It's counterproductive. You play with 10 men. This is not where he plays. This is not what he does. I just don't understand that systematically. Oh yeah, let's play him. Where do we play him? I don't know, somewhere there in midfield. Oh yeah, great idea. Let's play him there. And he's anonymous.
It's hard to believe he's going to play his way out of it if he keeps getting shuttled around the pitch, especially being played in positions that he's not suited to.
No, completely. Arsenal come from behind to get a point against Southampton at the Emirates, despite Gabriel sending off. Gab, did you see any sort of progress?
Well, you got a point. That's good.
You scored a goal.
And down to 10 points. Yeah, they scored a goal. Was it their first goal in, what, like 13 hours? And also, look, let's take a step back, right? This is not a good performance. There's a lot of issues here. Arteta obviously felt the heat because I thought Arsenal lined up more defensively than they usually do. Or at least the way they played was more defensive. But still, when Gabriel got sent off, you know, they were a goal down. They're playing Southampton, who, by the way, were fourth in the Premier League. Ralf Hasenhüttl is a serious manager, doing really well. Yeah. And I thought, all right, this is where the wheels come off. James Ward-Prowse is gonna score a free kick in the second half. Leno's gonna watch it go by, and that's that. Oh, and maybe David Luiz will get himself sent off somehow at the end too, right? But no, they stuck on for a point. Is it something to build on? No, there's deeper structural issues, but
it's a breather.
It's a breather. It's a breather.
And you score a goal not on a cross, which shows again that obsession with crossing all the time in previous games. It's just not working as well as just building something up like they did with Saka and Ketia and then Aubameyang.
Yeah, no question. Cristiano Ronaldo misses a penalty as Juventus and Atalanta draw 1-1. Jules, we're not used to seeing him fail in key moments, are we?
No, you're right. And he scored his last four as well, the two against Barcelona, the two in the league as well at the weekend. And yet, not this one. Golini with a good save.
Yeah, but Golini, of course, the rapping goalkeeper. Legitimately talented rapper, man. And Alvaro Morata, on the other hand, we have seen him fail in the past, and we saw him fail again.
Big chance, I don't know, literally, like, the goal was there, he was here.
And he decides to backheel it.
He tried to do something like Mario Balotelli. Do you remember that?
That didn't work either. I got to say this. Everybody's saying, oh, sub him off immediately. It's the same thing with Mario, because it was Mario. But you know what? If they score, we celebrate their genius and their inventiveness.
Of course.
We're all hypocrites.
I was a bit disappointed by Juventus, I have to say. They took the lead, and then I don't know, they just could not control the game. And Atalanta,
you rarely control the game against Atalanta.
Yeah, exactly,
anyway.
But still, you know. Speaking of this game, should we read anything into Papu Gomez, who, let's remind everyone, he's at war with Gasperini, what he did before the game?
Well, basically, the club have made it clear that, he's going to move probably in January because of the row with Gasperini. And so he goes and he hugs Dybala. Possibly because Dybala's in pretty much a very similar situation. And then he was caught singing along. You know, they play the Juve's club anthem. Yeah. Awful club anthem, by the way, in my opinion. And he's there happily singing along.
How does he know the words? That's what I wondered.
Oh, my God, it's the catchiest thing. Like, Juve, storia di un grande amore. Stupid. Awful. It's like real corporate guff.
Is that just a little move to Juve? Say, hey, come and get me.
No, I don't think so. I just think he was there. And it is a really, really just catchy trolling jingle. It's a song. It's going to stick in your head now for the rest of the day. More points draw for Manchester City as they draw 1-1 with West Brom, who then sacked their manager, Slaven Bilic, one of the good guys. Jules, at what point do you become concerned? I'm talking about City, not West Brom.
I don't want to talk about someone like that. Anyway, so thank you. They're 8 points behind Liverpool with the game in hand, City. So
that's 5 points. Nothing.
5 points if you win that game. 5 points is okay. More than 5 points, I start to get a bit worried because
it's also there's a lot of teams in front of them. It's not like you're just chasing one team and Liverpool are going to drop off. There's a lot of teams in front of them.
Starting with Southampton, who they face on Saturday, which is a huge game already. And I don't know, we saw there's a lot of worrying signs in this City team performances, everything that we saw again on Tuesday night. I don't know. I'm not completely worried, but I'm a bit concerned too, though. Real Madrid making 4 wins in a row, defeating Athletic Bilbao 3-1. Gab, neither of them are Paris-born and bred, but it's okay. But which one would you like to celebrate more of, my boys, Zinedine Zidane or Karim Benzema?
I like how they're still your boys, even though they're not from Paris. But that's fine. I want to celebrate Karim Benzema because I feel like we celebrated Zinedine Zidane before, but beyond the skills, the leadership that he is showing out there, it really is amazing. Like, once the big personalities moved away, you know, he deferred before, which was the right thing to do, and now he really is putting the team first. He's taking charge. I just can't say enough good things about him. And by the way, good for Real Madrid, Fede Valverde back in midfield. I think that makes a difference to have him fit.
Yeah, definitely.
Nicolas Zule has to play as what I thought was the largest right back in history, but apparently
I showed you
Christopher Ayer is even bigger.
Exactly.
Quentin Tolisso has to play midfield entirely by himself. Leroy Sané stinks it up again. Manuel Neuer has to wear a Superman cape. And Bayern find a way to win.
How they won that game, I'm not really sure. Again, Wolfsburg, who, by the way, were unbeaten until that game in the season, and played well and had chances and took the lead. And without Neuer being Superman, as you said, they would have scored at the end probably and got a point. That they would deserve that thing. But hey, Bayern have that sort of, I don't know, that clinical aspect of the game with Lewandowski, who scored two goals, 251 Bundesliga goals in like 330.
Yeah, it helps to have Lev up front and Norris at the back.
It's
first time in six games that they won the XG battle, by the way.
Yeah, but they're still not playing great.
No.
A Romelu Lukaku penalty helps Inter pass Napoli, who go down to 10 men after Lorenzo Insigne red card because of that penalty, and he went absolutely mad. Gab, Inter second, but did you see any progress? No back four that time.
No, they were no back four. They were bad. They got seemed to get worse after Napoli went down to 10 men. By the way, Insigne was Gattuso was really funny after the game. Gattuso wore a big eye patch, as you saw. Gattuso said,
"Yeah, like a pilot."
So what happened? You know, he said, and he said this is the F word in Italian,
F
right?
Off.
Well, yeah, and the referee sends him off from that. Since when? We're the only country in the world that does this.
You do that in England. You say F off in England, and you stay on the pitch.
Yeah, you have a laugh with the referee. I'm like, okay. but no, look, they're 1 point behind, right? Forward progress there, but not much to celebrate here other than the result.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain overcome Lorient. But Jules, this isn't a performance to write home about, is it?
No.
And do you blame Kylian Mbappe's blue hair?
I don't. I mean, it was very strange.
What's the deal with that?
I don't know what the idea where it comes from is
new
crazy.
Sponsor?
Yeah, he looked like a Smurf. Like, you know, that's the color is a Smurf. Nothing to say, I'm sorry, it's a win, you take a win. Big game on Sunday against Lille, the leaders, that's all. Milan need a late Pierre Kalulu equalizer to avoid defeat at Genoa. The lead at the top is now down to a single point. Gabs, are they slowing down? Well, I guess it's still a good point when they didn't play well at all.
I don't think they played that badly, actually. Look, inevitably they'll drop points at some point. 26 points unbeaten. Destro, the G.I. Joe villain, scoring two goals. We hadn't scored in like 3 years, it felt. And the cavalry's coming in the form of Ibra and Kjaer and Bennacer, who also missed this game.
Yeah.
The Edin Terzic era at Borussia Dortmund begins with a victory against Werder Bremen and more bad defending. Plus ça change. But at least Moukoko started,
of course, because Haaland is injured, as we know, didn't score. Bartho at times showed great understanding of the game, great movement. He could have scored on the Reina cross. That was maybe...
He's a kid. Leave him alone.
Yeah, same problems, and then the Favre, you're right.
Fix the defending, Edin. Fix the defending.
Exactly. Bayer Leverkusen remain top with an impressive 4-1, 4-0 win at Cologne. Gab, I'm not going to make you praise Peter Bosz, but praise Moussa Diaby and Florian Wirtz instead, please.
Moussa Diaby, he's got a great goal. He's so strong and mobile out wide. He just like eats up,
and
gobbles
so
up
small,
opposing
though.
Defenders.
It's
though. Amazing. But he's so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. And Florian Wirtz, like we said,
17.
The best yet to come, 17 years old.
Saturday. Bayern against Bayern.
Absolutely. Huge game. Lille remain top of Ligue 1. Jules, they're also apparently for sale.
Yeah, they are indeed, Gab. Jean Lopez, who owns the club, who's the president, will have to sell it because of the money they owe to, because of many loans that they took when they got the club to Elliott, who, by the way, owns AC Milan. And it looks like Jean Lopez was put in a position where, because of the interest on the remaining of the money they have to repay on those loans, Elliot don't feel comfortable with Gerard Lopez still being at the helm of the club, and he will have to sell to another investment firm very close to Elliot as well, Merling Partners, and that would be the end of an era.
So they're suggesting that they can make him sell the club?
it looks like that's the case, yeah, because he apparently didn't want to put his own guarantee for the remaining loans. And it's a bit complicated, really. It's quite technical. But in the end, the Gerard Lopez era at Lille has worked pretty well. I mean, they're top of the table right now. They qualify for the last 32 of the Europa League. They've been so good. Their business model, which is to sign young players and give them a platform and then sell them, has worked pretty well. Yet they still have debts. They still have loans to repay. And Elliot clearly didn't feel like Gerard Lopez could do that. So he would have to go. That means Luis Campos has to go, the sporting director, very successful sporting director.
Although he's not really an employee of the club.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. He was working for Lille via Gerard Lopez. But he's on the market now for whatever
club. He was on the market last summer as well. He was linked with a whole bunch of clubs. And
so is Marc Inglas. So end of an era, there will be a new one. Probably Olivier Letang, the former PSG sporting director, Rennes chairman, who will take over as the president of the club in Lille. So
former business partner of one Kia Drapshin,
too. Indeed, yeah.
Isn't it amazing how all these people all know each other
and, you know, all find jobs for each other? And I just hope that it doesn't have a negative impact on Lille and the incredible season they're having so far on Christophe Galtier, the manager, who is a really, really good manager, bright manager, who has a great future ahead of him. I hope that doesn't have an impact and Lille play PSG on Sunday night, so we'll have a first indication if that's the case or not.
Huge game coming up.
Yeah. Leipzig won quick. They don't play well, but Yusuf Poulsen goal gets them 3 points away to Hoffenheim. Gab, are you still convinced they're the biggest threat to Bayern?
Absolutely, they're the biggest threat to Bayern. They're arguably the deepest team in the Bundesliga. Szoboszlai could be on his way. They have Nagelsmann, and they have the only living sore loss in captivity. So,
hey, what can go wrong? Yeah.
Jules, more love for your techers. How about Sebastian Allais' overhead
kick? Oh, yes. Hello. Good of the season already. I think we can stop the count.
Okay.
Come on. Don't give me that face.
I'm going to say this. Paolo Di Canio, of all people, told me that we are stupid and fans are stupid because most overhead kicks, depending how it's done, it depends where your body is. It's not that difficult. He could do it all the time if he so chose. Well, he didn't quite say that, but they're not all the same. And I just wonder, the ball's kind of hanging for him. This big man's in the air and stuff. He's got gravity on his side. He makes impact. No?
What?
No.
Are you kidding me? This is incredible. Have you ever tried to do an overhead kick like this? When the ball comes at speed from across, from either the right or the left-hand side. It's not just throw the ball over you, like when you're a kid, and try to do the overhead kick and missing all the time. This is amazing. This is so spectacular. I think it's incredible.
All right, did you say the same thing about Wayne Rooney's overhead kick?
But he shinned it. Oh. This is not with a shin. This is a proper, amazing... That's better than Ronaldo's against... You know, this is...
Don't say better than Ronaldo. You're just getting in trouble with the fanboys.
I just thought it was amazing. I love overhead kicks. Michel Platini always used to say that if you have to overhead kick it, it's because your position was wrong in the first place, because you should actually head it. If you're in the right position.
There you go. So learn, Sebastian.
IFAB has recommended changes to the concussion protocol, something, Gab, that you've always been a big advocate of it. Of course, they're not actually going to be made. They're just trialing it starting next month.
Yeah, and you know what the change is? Oh, you can have a substitution, and it's not going to count against your quota of substitutions.
Yeah.
Okay, this, dear IFAB, does nothing. It doesn't change the simple fact of the matter that if a really good player, right, it's like, let's say Mohamed Salah or Leo Messi gets bumped on the head, you're still going to have a doctor on the sidelines sitting there having to make a quick decision. Yes, do I substitute him, meaning he can't come back on the pitch, and I've got the coach screaming at me and I have to assess his well-being.
And is Leo Messi in the Champions League final.
And it's Leo Messi in the Champions League final. And this doesn't solve the problem. Have, and also with five subs, it's even less of an issue, right? Have temporary substitutions.
Exactly.
These head injuries are really, really rare. And as we said before, your trial. What the hell trial?
What happened? How often does this happen? In 6 months.
What, are you going to trial it for the next 10 years so you have enough cases so that you've got a sample? This is stupid. This to me sends a message that they're not taking this seriously.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's a shame. Yeah. I think it's an absolute shame. In fact, I don't want to use the word disgrace, but I will. Disgrace. Shame. Quincy Promise is arrested on Monday, but Ajax boss Erik ten Hag says he expects him to play. Innocent until proven guilty, Jules. And by the way, for those who don't know, he was arrested I'm going to choose my word carefully here. He was arrested because of involvement in a stabbing.
A big incident in his home.
Yes, he was arrested and then he was released. He has not been charged yet.
Yeah, he placed in custody, was released, hasn't been charged yet. I think the investigation is still going on. Innocent until proven guilty, of course, is the same for everyone, whether you're a football player or something else. I'm not sure if mentally you're ready to play after something like this happened to you.
It's a decision for Erik ten Hag to make. I have no problem. I have no problem with that.
No, but again, maybe the common sense and the wise thing is to like saying, you know what, have a rest. Let's not get involved, because you also go back into the limelight if you play a game like this. That's what everybody's talking about in the Netherlands. So.
And it, it looks really bad if afterwards it turns out that, you know, he was somehow responsible for this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and we don't know the circumstances, and I'm pretty sure Erik ten Hag doesn't know the circumstances either.
Exactly. No James, no Coleman, no Ding, no Alan in the second half after his injury, but no problem for Carlo Ancelotti as Everton win at Leicester. Leicester, who were just 1 point from the top, and Everton back in fourth place.
Yeah, he had a stupidly good record against Brendan Rodgers, incidentally.
Really?
I don't think Brendan likes him very much at this point. I mean, I'm sure he likes him as a person, as like playing. I thought this was a really good performance. And just talking about Leicester, I mean, obviously we've overlooked him with our obsession with the Big Six and everything. So I do wonder if to some degree there isn't a bit of a parallel where when they play against teams where they can play on the counter, they're really, really effective. When they play against teams where they have to have more possession, they struggle a little more. But I don't think this is a philosophical Rodgers choice, because Rodgers, as you know, made his name in possession, right? Going back to Swansea and Liverpool and death by possession and all this nonsense. When he was at Celtic, you know, I didn't watch much SPL, but I would assume Celtic, probably since they were winning all those titles, had 70% possession most games. So I don't think philosophically... You know, he knows he's very good on the counter. He's got players to counterattack.
Yeah.
But I don't think philosophically he's wedded to that. I just think it's more the possession game. Maybe they haven't calibrated it as well as he likes. Maybe that's an area where they can improve.
Definitely.
I thought we were done with Kvyats and Kvyacy. And then I hear about Fabrice Ondoa. Tell me more, Jules.
The Austin goalkeeper who thought it was a good idea to organize a big party in lockdown in Belgium, because...
So you're calling it actually a lockdown party.
A lockdown party, exactly. With a lot of people, loads of alcohol, loads of music and everything, until obviously the police arrives and he gets done. And now he got sacked by his club, and rightly so.
And he was a legit keeper, not that
long ago. No, definitely. So... You should have known better, Fabrice, eh? The PFA has sent out a survey to its members asking them if they want to continue taking a knee before games in the Premier League and in the Football League. Gab, what do you make of this?
What do you think I'm going to say? This is stupid. I go back to the very beginning where you institutionalize it. Yeah. What are they going to do? If the majority of people say, no, we don't want to do it anymore, and then somebody does it, what do you do as PFA, right?
Yeah.
The whole point of this is you're protesting because you think something is wrong. The minute you ask permission, and this is implicitly what you're doing, or you get the blessing of the league, says, oh, no, we'll tell you how to do it, and everybody does it, then it loses the potency of a protest. This is just so ill thought out. You have to ask your union for permission if we want to continue doing this. Awful, awful. Yeah. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. Jules, should we come back on Monday?
Monday,
this again.
Definitely.
As the holiday season approaches,
we
don't stop, do we? Till then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.